think it's great, actually, that I'm going after your presentation, Pamela. I think you'll see that we have kind of similar studies, but in different contexts, it'll be interesting to kind of compare and contrast. So today I'm going to be talking about social context and antiretroviral adherence in HIV-infected young black MSM, and this is also a qualitative study. I do not have any financial relationships to disclose. So I won't belabor the epidemiology. I think that if you've been going to any other HIV talks for the past few days, probably most of us in the room are aware. But just briefly, this is a time where HIV incidence domestically is kind of stabilizing within most subgroups. But then as we see, there is an increase in young MSM, which is principally driven by increasing incidence in young MSM of color. And just one figure that I have up here recently was presented at the AIDS 2012 meeting from the HPTN 061, a brother study, when they looked at incidence over the 2 years in these six different cities across the U.S. It was 2.8% overall, but 5.9% in those under 30 years old. So this just kind of points to the need for culturally and developmentally appropriate interventions, not only for prevention, but also to support these newly HIV-positive youth, which has implications for their individual well-being as well as for secondary prevention and prevention of further transmission to others. So to kind of address this, I just wanted to start with an exploratory qualitative study focused on young people within this demographic living with HIV that were already engaged in care in Atlanta, Georgia. And similar to the study that we just heard about, there were several domains of inquiry, including things like family background, sex and relationships, identity issues, as well as healthcare experiences. So I recruited a sample of 20 people. It was primarily recruited through provider referrals. It was really a convenient sample. Most of them came from one clinic, which is the Ponce Family and Youth Center that provides care to pediatric and adolescent patients within a larger clinic in Atlanta. There were a few patients who came from the adult clinic downstairs, as well as one who came from another clinic too. The age range that I had set as inclusion criteria was actually 13 to 24, but the age range that ended up participating was 17 to 24. And really most were kind of in the upper end of that, so above 19 or 20 years of age. And so we conducted life history interviews with these participants. They were one-time interviews, ranged anywhere from one on the shorter end to three on the much longer end hours. Most probably were around 1.5 to 2 hours in length. Participants were compensated $25 for their participation. And we digitally recorded and then transcribed the interviews. So each transcript was read several times by one or two members of the analysis team. We wrote detailed case summaries for each participant to kind of highlight key themes for each person that came out and highlight different features of their narratives. And resilience was a theme that quickly emerged as kind of an overarching theme that spanned many of the varied transcripts. And it's been something that I've really enjoyed actually in attending a lot of the different presentations over the past few days, that I think a lot of people are starting to bring up resilience as something that needs to be brought into HIV prevention interventions with MSM in general. So it was nice that this is also something that kind of organically came out of our data. Of the 20 transcripts, there were 4 who reported poor adherence, and 3 had not yet started ART. But the remaining 13 actually said that their adherence was very good, reported they had undetectable viral loads and things like that. So those 13 transcripts of adherent young black MSM living with HIV are the focal point of this analysis. Just quickly, what is resilience? So here I build on the definition of it as a dynamic process encompassing positive adaptation within the context of significant adversity. And to varying levels, but without exception, these young men certainly face adversity. And it's important to kind of note that resilience is this process, is a trajectory, isn't just something that some people are born with and others aren't. So with this in mind, we revisited those selected transcripts to describe protective and oftentimes culturally relevant processes that are enhancing adherence and general good coping among these young men. Our thematic analysis focused on mechanisms of resilience that were described by multiple participants, so kind of recurring themes. And then key findings and definitions were discussed and agreed upon by study team members. We found that there was marked heterogeneity in the background and current life situations of the young men that we talked to. However, several key processes emerged as contributing to both resilience in general and medication adherence more specifically. And they are utilizing social support networks, prioritizing of health, teaching and volunteerism, faith and spirituality, and an active transition to adulthood. So I'll talk about these in a little more detail. Utilizing social support networks, and this is consistent with the literature that's out there, but this is something that was brought up by every participant. So everybody had somebody, some kind of social support that they drew on. But the structure and composition, as well as quality of the social support that the different young men experienced was certainly different. Family support was the most often cited kind of social support, with mothers specifically being cited the most often. Oftentimes, mothers or other family members directly influence medication adherence, as you might imagine you would do if you were the mother of a young boy with HIV, right? However, there were kind of other sources of social support as well. So some people saw the clinic as a family. This was less common than family support, but certainly came up in multiple interviews, that some people saw there's a teen support group in this adolescent clinic, which for many of the young boys was really influential for them and a great source of emotional as well as more tangible kind of support. Some people also saw the clinic staff as being very helpful to them. So whether it was actual medical providers counseling them on adherence, or if it was anyone from the phlebotomist to the receptionist just kind of being nice to them, smiling at them, making them feel accepted, these were things that they brought up as well. And finally, involvement in the gay community at large, or involvement with sort of gay families or non-biological families, was something that came up. And this one, I will say, there was some variation on whether or not it was a positive or negative influence for the young guys. Certainly, as a whole, people who had, you know, other kind of gay friend groups or people they could identify with, that seemed to be something that was helpful. But there were described by some people kind of gay father or gay brother type of relationships, which ended up being more risk promoting in some cases. So I wanted to just kind of pull in representative or particularly well-stated quotes to illustrate some of these. So here's an example from a 22-year-old participant who I'll call Stephen, who says, "My siblings, you know, both of my brothers cried. They were really hurt by my HIV diagnosis. They were mad and upset, but you know, they check on me, especially at the very beginning. They were like hounding me, like my personal alarm clock for my meds. I was like, y'all have to leave me alone. Please stop calling me." But you can see that in this case, they're directly kind of supporting him and helping him to maintain antiretroviral adherence. Prioritizing health was something else that I saw. So a lot of these young men just really, especially in the wake of their HIV diagnosis, listed health and specifically adherence as kind of key goals and accomplishments in their life. So even in answer to something as broad as what are you proud of, what's going well in their life, well in your life, they would bring up something like their health or their undetectable viral load. So they focus not just on meds though, but also on general health, exercise, diet, and health maintenance. So a 21-year-old who I'll call Keith says, "See, my life changed by, you know, the meds, eating healthy, staying, keeping my viral load down, keeping everything up, not trying to make everything shut down on you. I mean, eating right, drinking a lot of water, I lay back off certain stuff." So it's kind of just seeing HIV as a wake-up call to be a little more conscious of health. Teaching and volunteerism was something that emerged I thought was really great, where many participants discussed this, and it was kind of on a spectrum. So some of the kids that I talked to participated in formal speaking engagements. There's something called the Pipeline Program where they go like maybe once a year or something to speak with, say, Emory medical students or local high school students about what it's like to live with HIV. But for others, it was much more informal. And just they would say things like if they saw a friend being promiscuous or doing something that they thought would put them in danger, that they would then disclose their own story as kind of a cautionary tale. And for many of these guys, this whole like teaching and getting the word out was kind of a source of pride and a new added purpose in their life. So here's a quote from a 24-year-old who I'll call Omar. So he says, "So this is a bad thing. My HIV status is not great. But it's been doing great things for me. Like, I've been able to talk to people in group, and that's, again, talking about that teen support group in the clinic. I've been able to do the pipeline and talk to kids. I was interested in social work. Like, I was volunteering at the AIDS walk. This is what I'm doing. Like, this is the life I want to lead. And in other parts of his narrative, he really went on to say that, although, again, his HIV status was not a good thing per se, that he had kind of gained a certain maturity from it, and being able to talk to other people about HIV was a big component of that. Faith and spirituality was certainly an interesting thing that came out in many of the interviews. I think that the Black church is often assumed to be a source of stigma for Black MSM in the South, and that's certainly often true, but I think the relationship is also more complex. And for many of the young men in our sample, church or faith in general were seen as sources of comfort and were viewed on the whole more positively than negatively. Often young men were able to interpret Christianity in a way that doesn't prohibit homosexuality per se. And again, there was variability in the religiosity of the participants. So here's a quote about that from Chris, a 23-year-old. So he said, and this is kind of him talking about how he dealt with his initial diagnosis, basically what I knew to do was to fall back on my faith. I feel like that's what really got me through the situation. You used to hear about people killing themselves or overdosing on pills because they had HIV because they didn't know how to cope or deal with it. But I felt like I couldn't do that. I feel like now that I look back, now this probably sounds pretty silly, but I feel like there's a reason why I have it. And then this idea of kind of an active transition to adulthood. So I think in the setting of learning about other disease processes, people have talked about this active coping style in African American and other populations. And similarly, many of my participants, I felt like, were very actively transitioning to adulthood. So while that may be a label that we slap on them, they're emerging adults, they're development, I don't think I necessarily expected a lot of them to be aware of that. But it really seemed that many of them are kind of actively transitioning to adulthood, trying to become more responsible. They have a future orientation, they have a lot of perseverance, they can be resourceful, and they kind of have this renewed purpose in life. So one of the guys who exemplified that was Vince, a 22-year-old, who says, right now I'm just rebuilding who I am. I'm going through a transitional stage right now in my life where I'm trying to become a better adult because I'm trying to become more independent. And then later on he says, I have to be more responsible, make sure I take care of business no matter what, even if something bad happens. Of course, there are some limitations to this study. You know, have to keep in mind who we're talking about. It's a clinical sample that's already engaged in care, so already you're going to kind of sample from a higher functioning, relatively speaking, sample than maybe some of the others in the larger demographic. And it is primarily drawn from one clinical site. Also, I don't have an objective assessment of adherence, so I'm kind of taking their word for it that they are doing well with their meds. And this is a preliminary analysis, so there may be more kind of nuances that emerge. But I do think that it echoes kind of prior calls for resilience-based approaches to HIV research in MSM, and I really think that could be applied to any population. And in some of this prior research, social support and volunteerism have already been kind of identified as important resilience factors, but I think we found a few more that might be more specific to our social cultural context and our population. I think that this potentially has implications for strengths-based interventions, which could be family-based, peer mentoring, or even faith-based might appeal to some of our guys, and that this has significant implications for secondary prevention and treatment as prevention as well. So again, I also want to thank our participants who candidly and openly shared their life stories, the staff of the clinic where I recruited most of the participants and conducted the interviews, and the Emory Center for AIDS Research for supporting this study. Thank you.